You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up with less than a week to go before the New York primary, national frontrunners Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are leading and are expected to regain their momentum. We'll get more tonight after 7 with the political junkie Ken Rudin here on the Ideas Network.
In a few moments, some advice on being wise. First, Wisconsin life. The Niagara Escarpment stretches from New York to Wisconsin and shapes the geological, environmental, and human history of all that it touches. Like the escarpment, writer Robert Root's life stretches from New York to Wisconsin. In honor of upcoming Earth Day, he shares his connection to this geologic wonder.
Synchronicity happens to everyone. Carl Jung called it a meaningful coincidence, with no evident causal connection, but some apparent significance. Not everyone who notices a synchronicity is haunted by it. But one that haunts me persistently centers on the Niagara Escarpment. The Niagara Escarpment's most prominent feature is Niagara Falls, but as a geological formation, the escarpment arcs all the way from western New York, across western Ontario and northern Michigan, down through eastern Wisconsin. All of the land and all of the Great Lakes within the arc rest on Silurian strata, from which escarpment outcroppings emerge. Increase Lapham, Wisconsin's pioneer scientist, recognized the connection early from having helped excavate the Erie Canal in Lockport, New York, before finding the same strata in Wisconsin later on. The Niagara Escarpment, or the ledge, is visible on Rock Island in state and county parks like Peninsula and Pottawatomie and High Cliff, and for those looking for it, as far south as Brady's Rocks in Waukesha County. For me, that's where synchronicity comes into play. Like Lapham, I began in western New York, born and raised in Lockport. Like Lapham, I'll end in Waukesha County. Unlike him, I spent the middle of my life in Michigan, often visiting the Upper Peninsula, unaware of walking on the escarpment. The idea that the escarpment and I begin and end in the same places is the synchronicity I can't get out of my mind. On the Eagle segment of the Ice Age Trail, you pass through oak savanna and low wetlands before you reach the loop for Brady's Rocks. You walk beneath century-old oaks and gaze at the largest wet prairie east of the Mississippi. If the wind drowns out distant traffic sounds and you look across swaying grasses stretching in the distance, you can imagine how Michael and Kathleen Brady saw it for the first time when they began to farm here in 1855. Remnants of a stone rubble fence are all that remains of their farm. Outcroppings of stone that perch on the side of a slope are the most exposed natural evidence of the Niagara Escarpment in the county. If you're looking for a place to witness the end or the beginning of the arc of the escarpment, this is the place to come. Ice Age Trail volunteers maintain the Brady's Rocks Loop. There you pass between rock formations often shoulder height, head height, and higher. Random blocks of stone coated in thick coverings of moss, large freestanding blocks and short towers, and then a continuous wall of exposed stone. Amid abundant undergrowth, you find distinctive ferns, cliff break, fragile fern, and the intriguing walking fern, which grows a new fern when a leaf tip touches wet ground and thus walks across its habitat. The Brady's Rocks Loop has a kind of intimate seclusion, made more intimate and more secluded by the way the rocks obscure the view as you walk among them. Each time I walk among Brady's Rocks, I'm haunted by synchronicity. Here, the Niagara Escarpment and I both end, I think. It's made me start to walk the escarpment all the way back to the Erie Canal, headed back to where we both began.
Robert Root is the author of the forthcoming book, Walking Home Ground, Time, Terrain, Transition, and Other Books. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton.
Our next guest has made it her life's work to gather wisdom from some of the world's deepest thinkers. As the Peabody Award-winning host of the NPR show On Being, she's interviewed everyone from spiritual leaders like the Dalai Lama and Bishop Desmond Tutu to physicist Brian Greene and civil rights leader John Lewis.
Now she's collected what she's learned over the years in her new book, Becoming Wise. Krista Tippett joins us now. Krista, welcome to Central Time.
I'm so glad to be with you.
Well, there's a great quote from the poet Rilke that you talk about in your book, and it gets at the question of how to live the questions of life and learning to love those questions instead of looking always for the answers or finding those answers. What big questions do you think that we have to consider as human beings?
Right now, well, I think that a real hallmark of this moment we're in, culturally, nationally, and globally, is great big open questions. And, you know, things, basic aspects of life and of our life together that we kind of thought we'd figured out in the 20th century, definitions of life and death and gender and marriage. And also our technology is kind of turning all of our institutions inside out, because we're revisiting the meaning of things like authority and leadership and community and making and belonging. So I think that, you know, human beings, we're pretty well equipped when we have a clear crisis and a clear enemy. And sometimes we cope by creating a sense of an enemy. But right now, there are a lot of questions we have to live forward, because as Rilke said, we can't live the answers yet in ways we're all going to agree. So this, in my mind, is kind of calling us to finding new ways to live with our differences and still be in relationship to each other.
And it's interesting, when you talk about some of these big fundamental questions of life, you might think, well, Krista Tippett's going to be talking to people from various religions, theologians. But you do say that, you know, for instance, scientists are some of your favorite people to talk to about big questions. How come?
Yes. I actually think that physicists and neuroscience and biologists in this century are actually walking some of the ground that philosophers and theologians walked have traditionally held. These questions of what it means to be human and how we want to live, in that realm of neuroscience, we are understanding our bodies and brains in a way that is completely new, and with all kinds of knowledge that I think can be a form of power for us to attempt to rise to our best selves. I think that, you know, scientists, I mean, physicists, I mean, people working with the cosmos, are opening up our perspective on ourselves in a new way. And this is happening whether these scientists are setting out to explore spiritual questions or not. It's like, their discoveries have these really important moral and spiritual kind of resonance and implications.
Well, speaking of scientists, there's a quote from Einstein that you like. He said that he was looking more toward geniuses in the art of living, the phrase geniuses in the art of living. Do you think you've met people who could be described like that?
I do. You know, Einstein believed in his life for a long time that science could be this realm that transcended tribal rivalries and called humanity to its best self. And then he watched physicists and chemists in his age become creators of mass destruction, of weapons of mass destruction. And he looked at figures like Gandhi, who was his contemporary, and Jesus and Moses and Buddha and St. Francis of Assisi. And he said, these are geniuses. Spiritual geniuses in the art of living. So I have been pursuing that idea. I love that idea. But I think what has become so important to me, and what I really, really pursued as I wrote the book, is not just the spiritual geniuses of the ages, those great figures who come to mind. You know, also Martin Luther King Jr., Mother Teresa, Dorothy Day. But spiritual geniuses of the everyday, and my experience is that these lives that illuminate and bring compassion and beauty and hospitality to the spaces they can see and touch, that these lives are everywhere, and that kind of wisdom and spiritual genius is available to all of us. It's not just something for saints and for famous figures.
Well, your book is your own experience and what you've gone through over the years, but it's also highlighting some of these everyday geniuses that you talk to on your radio show. Who's an example of someone who you think is someone you wouldn't think might illuminate the life, the world for the rest of us, but did for you and for other people?
Oh, you know, I could just think about interviews I've done very recently. An indie rock band called Cloud Cult, which is our podcast for this week, which is a wonderful band. They make wonderful music, and they had a really cathartic experience when in the early years of the band, when the 2-year-old son of the singer-songwriter, the founder, died mysteriously in his sleep. And you know, they as parents and as a group walked through loss and made music around that experience and what they were making of it, and you know, encountered that there is a world of loss out there. And you know, I interview poets, and I interview, you know, as you say, physicists and neuroscientists, and there are these most unexpected ways to come at this part of life and illuminate it, you know. And one of the most important lessons, you know, to come back to Cloud Cult, to this band, is that in fact we become wise and we become courageous through the way we walk through what goes wrong, as much as anything else. That, you know, the ordinary elements of our lives, the words we speak, the physicality of our presence in the world, how we relate to our loved ones, but also to strangers, how we walk through what's not what we wish it to be. This is the breeding ground of wisdom. And I find it in all kinds of places and all kinds of ages of people.
Krista Tippett is with us now. She's the host of the NPR show On Being. Her new book is called Becoming Wise, and we're talking about how to live the big questions in life when you don't have all the answers.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you look for this kind of inspiration? Who inspires you? Who helps you become wise? Do you think we're moving toward a world that brings things like science and spirituality together? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and Krista Tippett is with us now. She's the host of the NPR show On Being, and her new book is called Becoming Wise. And we're talking about how to live the big questions in life, maybe when we don't have the answers. And Krista, you left off saying that we learn as much from these parts of our lives that aren't going so well as we do from the rest of our lives. And I wonder about some of your personal experience that you write about in the book. You write about going through periods of serious depression. How did that inform your view of the world and the job that you do on the radio today?
Yeah, well, I always think when you're talking about something like depression, it's really dangerous to say you know, to say to some, especially if there may be people listening who are in the middle of that, you know, that this will be good for you. That's not my message. But I think the truth is that all the dark places and the different infinite variety of that in human experience are also, you know, when we're broken in some way, we also are broken open. You know, what would break us often become those passages that also make us who we are. That and so that was certainly true for me of depression. It's not something I would have chosen. It's not something I'd wish on anyone. But it was for me a moment of having to face a lot of things in my past, some ways that I had survived that were really hard on me. And so I came to know myself better, and including my ragged edges. And I think, you know, I don't think of healing or wholeness as so much overcoming those things as integrating them into your sense of wholeness. I don't know. One of my favorite, I think one of the wisest people I know is a yoga teacher named Matthew Sanford, who's in the book, who's also been paralyzed since he was 14 from the waist down. And, you know, for him, I think, you know, he is healing and healed without being fixed. And that's a wonderful way for all of us to think about, you know, claiming as part of our wholeness the things that are not perfect. And we all have those things.
As we wrap up, I want to ask you about something you said in the book about one of the real luminaries that you talked to. Obviously, there were many of them, from names we've heard to names we haven't. But you did get to spend time with the Bishop Desmond Tutu, and yes. and you said you found him impossible to doubt. Why was that? What was it? What was that experience like?
Well, Desmond Tutu, yeah, of course, is extraordinary, and he is. I would say he has a quality that is true of all the wisest people I've sat with, and it's a physical presence. As you know, it's not merely spiritual. It is physical. It transmits itself. I mean, you know, Desmond Tutu told me that God has a sense of humor, and I think that line when Desmond Tutu tells you something about God, you're sitting with him, you believe him. And you know, in his person, like other people I've interviewed, famous and not so famous, he has there's a real power in his presence that just is palpable, and there's also a tenderness, a gentleness, an ability to laugh easily and to smile, and also to laugh at himself, and that is kind of the physical manifestation of wisdom as I've experienced it.
And we'll leave it there. Krista, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to be with you.
Krista Tippett is the Peabody Award-winning host of NPR's On Being. Her new book is called Becoming Wise.